American Fugitive, an SAV production, starring Kitty and Bobby as the host, freed by fate to pursue an in-depth discussion of television's finest dramatic series ever, A Fugitive.
Everybody, talking Fugitive, back on for another exciting 30 minutes. The hosts, not only now Kitty and Bobby, but also Ken will be joining or leading the discussion tonight when we're going to do Home is the Hunted Part 2. And if you would like to contribute, you can do so by phone, 800-407-KSAV, or email during the program, talk@ksav.org. And any other time, fugitive@ksav.org. You know, I'm kind of impressed with you guys for a lot of things, but yours is the only program that has an announcer. Everybody else has to do it themselves. But here on your show, you have a studio announcer to welcome you on. I think that's kind of a touch of class.
Well, we go first class all the way.
It's third class. All right, Home is the Hunted, Part 2. And I think to kind of break up the monotony here from week to week, we'll let the Kitty start things off this week. So, Kitty, you go ahead.
Oh, okay, thanks. Well, one of the things that we wanted to bring up was that last week, of course, we talked about how this episode introduces us to Kimball's sister, Donna, and his brother, Ray. But this episode also introduces us to his father. And also, we see very briefly Donna's husband, Lynn Taft, and we also see Donna's two little boys. And so we get this very nice reunion between Richard and his ailing father. His father is not in the best of health. And then, of course, you've got Gerard in this episode as well. And what tips Gerard off to why he may suspect Kimball might try to see his father is because his father has made a donation of books to a university, and he figures that it's because his father is not in the best of health, and so that would bring Richard out of the woodwork to try to see his dad one more time before he passed away. But you know, to me, that's kind of almost a minor standpoint, because I think the scenes between Richard and his dad are very well done. I think they're very touching. You know, you see the son and father that haven't seen each other in a really long time. And when you see them interacting, you know that it may be for the last time, particularly when they say goodbye. It's very sad. And then, of course, you also see, very briefly, you see Donna's husband. You don't really see enough of him to really know much about him, other than the fact you know that he believes that Richard didn't kill Helen. You know, just by the very brief interaction you see between them, you know that he thinks that he's innocent. And then you see the two little boys played by two child actors that you will see on hit television series a little later on, played by Bill Mumy and Clint Howard. And just seeing Richard watching his nephews playing is really kind of a joy to see, because, you know, you see how much that he would have liked to have had children, just by how much he's enjoying watching these two little nephews of his playing. And interestingly enough, you've got Robert Keith playing Richard Kimball's father, who is the father of Brian Keith, who played the nemesis of Richard in the pilot of the series. So I thought that was kind of interesting there. What do you think, Ken?
It's a very interesting episode, Home is the Hunted. I remember the first time I saw it, it was really like down to earth, a little different than what we were used to watching, you know, in the first, 12 or 13 episodes. And I love Donna in this episode. And like I said before, I would have liked to have seen her character developed throughout the 4 years of the series. I was disappointed that they didn't show her more. But when you watch this episode, you just fall in love with her. I mean, I would be proud to have Donna as my sister. And, you know, the way Richard came into town, I believe it was at night, and then he snuck into the house, that was pretty crafty of him, and it's kind of believable. And if I was a fugitive, you know, I would want to try to sneak home, see my sister, see my dad. The Robert Keith character, I said it on the message board way back, he looks 100 years old right here, so I was confused there. If Richard's 33 or 34 or 32 years old at this point, then the father should be in his 60s. But to me, he looks like he's about 85.
Well, but on the other hand, he's not supposed to be in the greatest of health. I mean, when people are getting into poor health, they tend to look older than they actually are. And I always got the impression that Richard was supposed to be a little bit older than David Jansen. In fact, when you look at the beginning of the show and you see him in that really awful gray wig, it looks to me like they took pains to try to put wrinkles around his eyes to make him look like he's older than he actually, than David Jansen actually is.
Yeah. I think, though, the father character was miscast. I've complimented the producers for casting the right people, you know, Susan Oliver, Suzanne Plissett, Donna, and so forth. But when I look at, you know, Kimbo's father here, I think they miscast the Robert Keith in that role. I would have used someone else, maybe a little younger looking, and also I would have brought the father back later on, too, just to have a one appearance of him. It was a little disappointing. I mean, you've got a series that is going from week to week to week. And, you know, you get a little tired of seeing Richard taken hostage or in bank robbers or this or that. You know, bring the family in, get some human touch, see what Richard's really feeling. There's a lot of stories that could have been developed. But all in all, I liked Home as the Hunted, and all Fugitive fans need to really see this episode. Very important.
Okay, well, let me clear up something about this age thing. I just watched this today. The fact of the matter is that during their first discussion between Richard and Ray, Richard says to his brother about his father, he's 70 years old. So he's supposed to be 70 years old in this episode, not in the 60s. And Robert Keith, at the time they filmed this, was indeed 65. So, you know, I mean, I agree, he looks rather old, but he died a couple of years later, so he may not have been well himself, to be honest with you, in real life at that time. I really wasn't that troubled by that. I mean, if he's 70 years old, that's believable, because I believe Kimball is supposed to be around 33 or 34 years old, so, you know, his father would naturally have had a son into his middle or late 30s, certainly believable. I have to disagree about miscasting Robert Keith. I think it's perfect casting. I'll tell you why. Because he's very low-key. He's very low-key in all of these scenes, which fits the way David Jansen always acts. I mean, watch the scene, the first scene in which they meet. It's done virtually without any dialogue. They just stand there and look at each other. You can see the tears welling up in David Jansen's eyes. And that's the way that was his acting. He was not an actor to be over the top. He didn't show emotions a great deal. And I don't have any really great knowledge of Robert Keith. He's a little before my time. But in this particular episode, he's very low-key. And I think that in the two scenes that we have together, early on and then at the end when they part, they look like father and son. They really do, because they're pretty much acting the same way. I think that, you know, I would expect Richard Kimball to have a father like that, somebody very low-key, because he's not one to get very excited about anything. So I really do like that casting. A couple of scenes early on that I really found very interesting. He sits down and has to talk with his father, and his father admits to him that he did indeed always favor Richard as the favorite son. He tells him, he said, well, you were the smart one. You were the one that everybody expected to be a doctor like I am. And this is very interesting, because you don't normally see this if you see a movie or a TV series. You see a lot of controversy, sibling rivalry, things like that. one always blaming one of the parents, saying, you really favored my brother. And parents will usually say, or at least they should say, that's not true. I love you both equally. I'm not favoring one or the other. He admits it out front. I mean, he says right to him. He looks at him and he says, well, to tell you the truth, I really did favor you because you were just better than Ray. I've taken the task for that because I think, you know, that may be part of what causes Ray to be the way that he is. When he says to Richard early on, you know, nobody ever cared about me. He only cared about you. And that's the story right there. However, I would like to sympathize with Ray, but I'm afraid I really don't. And we can get into this on the second part of the show tonight. I just think that Ray is has hitched his wagon to his brother's descending star as a way of excusing the fact that he's become nothing. You know, in their first talk, he tells them, I was engaged. I was going to be an engineer. Everything was fine. We waited. We did everything we were supposed to do. I went through school. I waited till the right job came along. We got engaged. And then you came along, and you got caught up in this murder trial, and then you escaped, he says to him. And ever since then, I've had nothing but problems. I find this can be completely ridiculous. There's no way in the world. First of all, I want to know how Ray can expect anybody to buy this. Certainly the Kimmel family must be looked upon with a great deal of respect in a small town like Stafford. You've got two doctors. You've got a father and a son who both became physicians. I don't know whether his father was a pediatrician. I don't think they ever mentioned that. And so there must be some goodwill built up for the Kimball family. So how does it make any sense that everybody in town hates them now simply because of this trial and everything? I really can't have any sympathy for Ray. And, you know, part of the problem here is that, as we've often mentioned, this series never gives us any background about anybody. Yep. It gives us lots of characters, but it never gives us any background. It never tells us what happened early on. So I really don't know what Ray was like when he was a kid. Was he bad? Was he impossible to deal with? Did he not concentrate on things? He's going to be an engineer. He's certainly no idiot. So I'm feeling like I'm not getting the whole story here. I really don't understand why he's having these problems, and that's one of the reasons why I don't really have a lot of sympathy for him. We talk about that a lot in this series, that everything is always done halfway. It's as though they worked so hard to create characters, they now have no time to tell you anything about them. And I don't agree with that. I think if you write a story, even an hour-long story, and you do it right, and you plan it out in advance, you should have plenty of time to let us know exactly what's going on. So it's very, very difficult to have any real sympathy for Ray in this instance, because I don't see it. I don't see anybody else having problems. I don't see Donna having problems. The kids look well-adjusted. They're playing. They seem happy. You don't get any discussion from anybody else that says life has been miserable ever since this happened. They show no ill effects at all. So Ray stands out in this respect, and I'm afraid I have to turn thumbs down on him because, instead of worrying about his brother and about what's happening to him and all these years on the road, he's worried about himself, and, you know, he's simply in denial. He doesn't want to admit that there's something wrong with him. He can't hold a job. Tells Richard early on that he was engaged, and after the trial, her family talked her into breaking the engagement. Well, you know, I'm assuming she was a grown woman, and she had a mind of her own, so she really loved Ray, and she really supported him. Nothing that her family would have said about marrying into the Kimball family would have had any impact. So that really does surprise me. So
all right,
Ray does not get a high rating from me.
All right. Well, I think you've done the tap dance on poor Ray long enough. I thought we were going to allude to who was the Smothers Brothers. Mom always liked you best,
one of those,
or whatever.
That's right.
We're going to take, and this is a real brief timeout. 800-407-KSAV if you want to join in. But you know, if you're like me, I just enjoy listening. You don't need to say anything. Quick timeout. We'll be right back. You stay here on Retro Radio.
Hi, this is Kathy Lennon. Be sure to listen in on Tuesday night, September 19th at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific, when my sister Janet and I join Dave White and Ed Robertson on Talking Television with Dave White, here on ShareaVision Radio, KSAV.
Hello, this is Michael Savisca. I love hearing some of my favorite songs played on KSAV.
We're back. That was a quick timeout. A lot of time as phony announcers just use that, and then you sit there for 5 minutes waiting.
It's a good thing you didn't go to the bathroom.
Are we going to... when you return here in 2 weeks, there's not going to be a part three of Home is the Hunted, is
no.
there? No. Okay, we're moving on. Tell listeners what to expect in 2 weeks. When will that be? The 12th? No, the
19th.
Okay.
Okay, well, as everybody knows, everybody who's familiar with the series knows that... though Richard Kimball may lack a lot of things in his life since he hit the road. One thing he doesn't lack is female companionship. Writers are always throwing women in his way, and not everyday women, but beautiful women like Suzanne Plachet, Susan Oliver, Angie Dickinson, lots of guest stars who you wouldn't imagine would be attracted to a man who doesn't have a home. So we had a show earlier in our series here, which we talked about, Women of the Fugitive in Season 1. But in 2 weeks, we're going to come back with part one of a show we're calling Sex and the Single Fugitive, The Secret Sex Life of Richard Kimball. Because the question is, all we ever see on screen is these romances. We see lots of kisses and hugs and things like that. We don't see anything else. Of course, it's the mid-60s, so we're not allowed to see anything. But that doesn't mean it isn't happening.
I've had a secret sex life my whole life. It's a secret even from me.
Well, we were going to do a show about you, but it's impossible. So what we're going to do is a two-part show on that. We're going to take these people one by one and try to find out whether or not Richard Kimball is really as straight-laced as he appears to be. That'll be part one next, and then on October the 3rd, we will do part two of that show. I also have another announcement to make tonight, and that is that the Fugitive Views and Reviews is very proud to announce that on Monday, December the 18th, on our message board, we will post part one of a three-part, our first fan fiction story written specifically for our group that is tied directly into the original series. And this story, I can't say a whole lot about it right now, but I can. The reason why I am promoting it tonight is because it has to do with this story. It will reunite Richard and Raymond, the two brothers, in a setting other than Stafford, Indiana. Also, during 120 episodes of The Fugitive, the original Fugitive, 22 episodes of the 2000-2001 version, and a two-hour movie, one thing Richard Kimball never had was Christmas. It was never Christmas, ever. It was like it didn't exist. No Christmas stories, no mention of Christmas, nothing. And we feel like it's time for Richard Kimball to have a holiday. So the story will take place at Christmas. It's going to be in three parts on that Monday, the 18th, then Thursday of that week, and the following Thursday, the next week. And who has written this story? Well, none other than one of the co-hosts of this show. Kitty has written this story.
Oh, wow.
And Kitty has extensive experience writing. She, along with Linda Ford, who has called this show several times, co-wrote 12 episodes that continued the 2000-2001 series and culminated in the Fugitive finale that tied up all the loose ends. So we know that Kitty is certainly more than capable. I have not seen this story, and I don't want to see it until it's time to post it. And we're really looking forward to this. Normally, we do not do reviews in December because of the holidays. So this gives us a chance to finally have something to put on the message board. Not only will there be a story, but there's going to be a daily series of a brand new composite screen captures never seen before.
All right.
So this is something different, and we hope everybody will check out the message board around the holidays. I know everybody's busy, but there will be good reason to do it. And I hear tell that not only Raymond and Rich are going to get back together, but there's going to be some other surprises.
How about
some
Donna?
Other people in this story, too. So, Kitty, thank you very much.
We hey, Bob, how about Donna? Is she going to be in the story?
I'm not at liberty to say, and I really don't know, and I don't want to know. So if you want to find out if Donna's in it or anybody else, you've got to check out the message board beginning Monday, December the 18th. It'll run for 2 weeks. Okay, Kitty, I know you have an email to read for tonight, so why don't you do that?
Okay, yes. This is from Helen in England, and she writes, I think it is far-fetched that employer after employer would sack Ray when they found out he was a convict's brother. Surely at least one would give him a break, but given that Ray says this was happening, wouldn't he have the grounds for wrongful dismissal? If he'd taken an employer to court in the 60s, could the employer have been forced to reinstate him? And I don't know, Bob, you were working in the 60s. What was it like? Could an employer sack you for something like that?
Well, let's put it this way. There weren't the kind of protections and laws in the mid-60s that you have today where you can just fire people for any reason because you don't like the color of their skin or whatever they're, you know, it didn't really exist back then very much. We're just kind of on the verge of that. But the reality of it is, you know, as a person myself who has hired and fired people, if you don't like somebody, you can certainly find other ways. You can always claim that they're not doing a good job, things like that, even though you may have a different reason. It's very hard for an employee to have any grounds to do anything. I guess he could have done that, but I would rather take that. I want to expand on that a little bit. She makes a good point. My question is, I don't know whether he would have been able to sue or anything or gone to a government agency. I have my doubts about that at that time. But why should that even come up? I mean, in conversations with Richard, he tells him that he manages to work for about 3 months at a time, and then he says, and when the board of directors, that's how he puts it, or a client finds out who I am, that's it. I'm out of there. Well, don't you think that in a small town like Stafford, the minute he applies for a job and says, my name is Ray Kimball, that's the tip-off right there?
Yeah, you'd think they'd be like, oh, any relation to Richard Kimball?
How can he work for 3 months? I mean, it's over immediately.
Yeah, I mean, it. You know, and what always struck me interesting about Stafford is that, you know how at the beginning of this episode when Richard first comes into town, they show him looking out on the town, and supposedly it's a small town, but it doesn't really look that small to me. Does it look that small to you?
It's hard to tell. But it's a town in Indiana. How big can it be?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always got the impression it was a small town.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm trying to figure out what is the definition here of a small town. Are we talking 3,500 people that live there or 35,000 people who work there?
It's got to be one of the places where everybody knows everybody.
Right.
Besides, how many other people live in town that are named Kimball? It's not an everyday name.
That's true.
I mean, obviously, if you go to Stafford and you say Kimball, they go, oh, the big murder case. Well, I'm sure everybody knows that. Even in the mid-60s, before we had cable TV and news shows and all that, that had to be the case. So, in my opinion, I think this is another thing from Ray that just doesn't add up, you know, because he goes in and he says, hi, I want to apply for this job. I'm Ray Kimball. The jig is up right there. I just see how it comes 3 months down the road, a client says, who's handling my case? Ray Kimball? You got to be kidding me. I mean,
Ray should have moved.
I was going to say that. Why not move out of town?
Yeah, just move out of town. But was he living at home? Did you get the impression? I guess he came through the back door.
I didn't
get the feeling he was living there.
He just came over?
Yeah, I got the impression he was just hanging out.
But I want to ask you guys about the end of this episode.
I'm glad because I wanted to ask too.
Don't you think that when you have a classic story like this, that you come up with a classic ending? I mean, I don't know. It fell flat with me. You had the little race cars going around the track. You have Gerard, who really didn't add much here. And then Ray says, oh, I don't know where he is. And then
but
you just kind of fade off.
But that's not the end.
Well, the end is nothing. What is the end?
Well, let me just say something before we run out of time. The ending is the final confrontation between Kimball and his brother, okay?
Yeah.
They're standing talking in the living room somewhere in the house, and he finally has to face him down about this, because his father tells him, he says, you know, clear this up between the two of you. And so they have this discussion, in which it becomes apparent that Ray doesn't believe that Kimball didn't kill his wife, which is a surprise to me, because it didn't look like that at the beginning of the episode.
Well, yeah, actually, it's true, because at the beginning of the episode, it's
right.
established that he cares as to whether or not Kimball's been caught or not.
Right, so they have this discussion in which he says, you don't believe me. And says, so what does Kimball do? He says to him, if you don't believe me, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave this house right now and go and turn myself into Gerard. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah, it was.
How does that resolve anything? How does that resolve anything? He says to Ray, he says, I'm going to prove I'm not afraid to die. And then Raymond goes, you can't do this. This is a terrible thing to do. And they get back together. Tell me something, the two of you, before we run out of time here. Tell me how this is going to help Ray. When the story ends, if Raymond claims that everybody in town hates him because he knows Richard Kimball, even though they have this discussion and Kimball has convinced him that he didn't do it, how does this help Ray later on? It just changes nothing, does it not?
Well, I'd like to think that Ray will maybe move and go find a job somewhere else.
Well, he could have done that at the beginning.
Yeah. It just kind of left you hanging. I hate that when you have an episode, and then at the end, you're left hanging and wondering, all right, what's next? Where's this going?
Well, it went nowhere because we never saw Ray again on the show.
Well, yeah. And that's my whole point. There's a lot of that that goes on. You know, they go out of their way not to connect stories, and I've been told by a million people on the message board, that's not the way the series was built and developed. They wanted to do separate stories. Okay. But somewhere along the line, you know, you got to make a connection where you're going to drive people crazy. And when you don't make a connection, this is what you end up with. You end up with a lot of loose ends, like Ken's talking about. In this case, it's a classic loose end, because I don't see anything being resolved here. One more thing. Kimball says he's going to turn himself. He is bluffing here, is he not?
Oh, yeah. I always got the impression he was using reverse psychology
right.
on him.
Yeah. He wasn't going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine that he was going to turn himself. He's not the type, not after all of this, simply because his brother doesn't believe. So after they have a conversation, you know, he meets his father for the last time. They have a very emotional hug at the end. And his father says, well, is it taken care of? And he goes, yes, it's taken care of. Well, maybe
yeah.
to him. But to me, I agree with Ken. Not to me. And the only reason I don't like that, I like the ending where he hugs his father. It's very emotional, very sad. That ending I do like. What I don't like is that I don't see any resolution to the problem. All I know is there was a problem set up at the beginning, and it never got resolved at the end, because the issue is not whether Ray loves his brother or believes him or not. The issue is that this is right out of Ray's mouth. He says, everybody in this town believes you did it, and they're taking it out on me.
How about if Ray were to volunteer to take Richard's place in the gas chamber? Wouldn't that make for a happy
well,
ending?
I just like him so much, I wouldn't have minded that. Well, Ray will be back on December the 18th, and we'll see what happens to him then.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
All right, Tina, you're so worried about me cutting you off, you've got another 21 seconds.
Oh, right. I do?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
no,
I don't like to rush you through things here.
Hey, Bob, you know what I would like to have seen at the end of this episode? I'd like
what?
To see a last conversation between Richard and Donna, and he tells Donna, hey, Donna, maybe I'll contact you down the road, and this is how I'm going to do it. He never did that to Donna. He just kind of waves goodbye.
That's true.
All right, now I get to interrupt you.
Oh, okay.
A good job, well done, and we're going to move on in 2 weeks on the 19th. All of you join the multiple hosts here again to talk some more Fugitive. In 1 hour from tonight, Talking Television with Dave White, one of my favorite programs. We're going to be featuring Charlie's Angels, and if you think, you know, The Fugitive was a bit silly, you come on and tell me why this show was so popular.
Well, Dave,
but anyway,
Dave, can we be known as Dave's Angels?
Dave, Dave, whatever. I like it. All right, folks, see you in an hour, and see you guys in 2 weeks when we do it all again on Sheravision Radio.